Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Oh, yes, indeedy. I'll be your conductor tonight. The train that I usually use to close the show is now being used to open the show. Welcome aboard to the Savage Nation train. Today is the it's not yet 4 years until the next election. We could start counting down. I mean, if I were Wallbanger, I could start doing a countdown until Obama's out of office. I don't think you'd like that very much. And so, therefore, I'm not going to be one of those who are picking over the bones of the election. I mean, what's the point? It's over. It's over. The Fugazi won. Why did he win? There are a number of different reasons. You can pick it any way you want. You can look at it any way you want. You can blame anyone you want. The fact of the matter is the conservative voter didn't come out. Period. End of story. Oh, yes, there are other factors. Hispanics came out in greater numbers, but not that great a number. Cuban Americans who should have voted for Romney didn't because he was a wimp. Factor two. But the big factor is the white conservative didn't come out for Romney. Why? Because he wasn't conservative. He was just a guy, a nice fraternity guy that, well, what do you need him for? You're better off with the nasty commie. You know what I'm saying? They figured, all right, let's stick with the nasty commie. It was almost a spite job that they didn't come out. So I don't want to talk about it. I'm going to ask one loaded question, then I'm going to read great stories for my website, then I'm going to, I don't know, entertain you tonight. I got 4 years till the next election. Think about that. 4 years till the next election. The politicians don't care about you right now. We have what's called an intermittent dictatorship in America. It is punctuated with occasional democracy. Every 4 years they come to you like you matter. And then they abandon you like you don't because you really don't. The fact of the matter is the power structure could care less about you now. Frankly, the Republicans are more relieved than you could ever imagine. See, they really wanted Obama to win. You don't understand. John Boehner's happy. He's happy now because he gets to pretend that he's sort of the other party. He gets to pretend he's the opposition party, and he gets to attack the Democrats for all the things he doesn't really want to pass. So what could be better? And that way, the Republicrats get exactly what they want. The Democrats get just what they want. They get to screw you, take more taxes, and get away with virtual murder. So what, I should eat my heart out over it? So let we, the little people, have to entertain ourselves for the next 4 years. And so, therefore, let's begin with a question. Let's get even with some of the pundits and prognosticators who were so wrong that they should never be heard from again. Which pundit or prognosticator was so wrong and so off that they should never, ever be listened to again and they should be sent to Siberia and just thrown off the air? Let's start with Karl Rove. Karl Rove took hundreds of millions of dollars for his PAC, and every campaign that he supervised lost. Why? Well, let's put it to you this way. Aside from being perhaps the most unpalatable-looking Republican in American history, and I don't mean anything negative about it. I don't know the man, but if I were casting a movie about World War II, he would not play one of the American soldier heroes. He'd play an SA officer. Just a personal bias of mine. So given that he's physically unappealing and has the look of that type of look, but he was wrong about everything because he ran the wrong campaigns. If you care to make a list with me of pundits or prognosticators that were so off, like Karl Rove, you'll never want to hear from them again. Why does Fox News have that man on? So let's go into the stories on my website. I spend all day from early in the morning. I get up at dawn. I can't help it. It's the old Lenny Bruce joke. Yeah, I always get up 13 hours before a show. I can't help it. The show starts 6 o'clock at night on the West Coast. I live on the West Coast. 9 o'clock on the East Coast. I get up at dawn. No matter when I go to sleep, any light comes through the curtains. And I have blacked out bedrooms everywhere. I have a fanatic need for blacked out bedrooms because I like to control the environment. It doesn't matter. The diurnal cycle is one that I run on. No matter when I go to sleep, the hint of light and I'm up hunting. I'm out there on the plains. I'm looking for the buffalo. I'm out there for the ducks. I'm out there on the boat fishing. And I can't help myself. 10 feet from the bed is the computer. I try not to go to it. I get up in the morning. The dog has to go out. He can't go to the bathroom in the house, right? He knows to wait. By the time I pan over to the other side of the house to let him out, unfortunately, I pass the temptation of the computer. And I say to myself, don't do it. Don't look at your emails. Don't look at the news. Before the dog comes back from the garden, I've looked at all my emails and all the news. And I can't sleep anymore. So what's the point? All right, so I'll nap in the afternoon. That's right. I wait for the afternoon nap. By the way, napping is absolutely the most important health act you can perform. Many of you can't. I understand you can't sleep at work unless you work for the Obama administration. They don't expect you to get up at all. You can come to work for the federal government in your jammies. In fact, I would suspect that's soon going to be a civil right. Under the new administration, which is that if a person wants to come to work in their pajamas, it should be considered a civil right and a violation thereof of their civil rights if you're not allowed to come in your pajamas. They don't work anyway. What's the difference? For example, here's San Francisco, the sickest city in the whole world. I would say it's sicker than any city on the planet, which makes it charming. I saw this as I was getting ready for the show. It says, here's the headline for the Associated Press. They're even hiding it. I swear to God, here's the headline. California city plans to provide transgender surgeries. They're not even saying San Francisco anymore. They're hiding the fact that we have the most demented, corrupt individuals in the history of the Western world running the city. Here is a city so bankrupt, they don't know where to get money from, but they decided that they're going to be the first U.S. city in America to provide the cost of sex reassignment surgeries for uninsured transgender residents. And that's because they experience mental distress because of the apparent mismatch between their bodies and their gender identities. Now, although San Francisco already provides transgender residents with hormones, counseling, and routine health services, they had stopped short of offering surgical interventions. But now if Marvin wants to become Harriet and he wants to have his... you know what, cut off, the voters are going to have to pay for it under San Francisco's five-year-old universal health care plan. If Harriet, on the other hand, wants to become Marvin, the San Francisco Board of Supervisors have decided they will add not Marvin's but someone else's apparatus to Harriet so that she can feel that her body now matches her, I guess, her mind. I'm asking a question. Is this not insanity? It's unbelievable to me. But even the Associated Press is embarrassed to say the word San Francisco in association with this story. California City plans to provide transgender surgeries. All right, next case. Don't even call me on that. There's some great stories on my website. America Goes Into the Darkness by a British writer, Melanie Phillips, is not to be missed. Read it. I won't read it to you. It'll start sounding pedantic, but it's so well written. See, if you read it, it reads well. If I read it to you, it sounds pedantic and you tune in sports or a sex show. Next story. Pentagon, Iran fired an unarmed U.S. drone. So, what are they crying now? What do they want me to do something about it? You mean Leon Panetta's Pentagon is bellyaching and like a sissy? Oh, Iran fired at an unarmed U.S. drone. Well, what do you want from me? You run the Pentagon, not me. So drop a bomb on the bastards. What are you telling me about it? What are you bellyaching about? What are you doing? You're spying on them. Of course they try to shoot it down. It's war, you putz. You weren't flying a pancetta over them, were you? Were you flying a mortadella over them with wings? From Reuters, after Obama win, U.S. backs global gun control. You're shocked. Five questions with Michael Savage from the Washington Times, who call me one of the most influential conservative voices in America. Thank you very much, Mr. Decker. I appreciate that. We have a picture of your president bowing to the president of China, the dictator president of China, the presidential dictator of China, in an earlier photo that was not shown by any of the vermin in the media. And it says, China cheers Obama victory. No, they didn't cheer. One of their fellow travelers won. What do you think, going to be unhappy? From the Miami Herald on MichaelSavage.com, here comes this story with my headline. Poll says Obama got big share of Cuban-American votes. Why? because Romney was a weakling. Romney was a middle-of-the-road schmendrick. So the Cubans, who like a macho leader who stands for something, said, no, I don't think so. No. Next headline, Karl Rove shouldn't get a dime from conservatives. That's my headline. In any logical universe, Rove would never be hired, say certain people. He could always take a part in a Steven Spielberg movie about World War II playing the enemy. Here's another headline from the Chicago Sun-Times. My headline, Hijackson Jr. hiding in plain sight from feds? Question mark. Here's a guy hiding in the Mayo Clinic in a bug house, claiming he has disorders of the mind. Meanwhile, the feds are probing his alleged misuse of campaign funds. He had disorders and this. He hasn't worked, but he got 73% of the vote in Chicago. They haven't seen him. He was in the Mayo Clinic. He had a bipolar disorder, depression. Which person in Congress, by the way, does not suffer from those disorders? Can you name one member of Congress who does not suffer from depression and bipolar disorder by dint of the fact that they're politicians, they're mentally deranged? Who else would take such a job? So apparently he's been to the outsider. I don't know if he's actually sick or not, but that's a good racket. All you have to do is claim that you have depression and bipolar, and then they can't touch you in the workplace environment. It's good. That's very good. He hasn't pled guilty yet, but Hijackson Jr. is in discussions with the feds who are probing his alleged misuse of campaign funds. You say, not a big deal? Well, if you remember a former Illinois governor by the name of Rod Blagojevich, I could never pronounce those Central European names, Blagojevich. I like Rod Blagojevich as a personality. He's, of course, in the jail right now. Blagojevich, of course, went to jail for a very similar accusation. Remember that? But apparently the standards don't apply to Hijackson Jr. because Hijackson Sr. has a little, grease with the big guy in the White House. That's all. That's story number four on michaelsavage.com. You can call me at 1-855-400-SAVAGE. That's 855. Write it down, boys and girls. It's a new number. 855-400-7282. And these are any of the topics. Let me read a few more. I can see already it's a dull job with the callers. I got one call. Shocking. Not one topic I mentioned did anyone call on. They're calling about something off the walls. So I'll keep reading until someone else in America calls the Savage Nation. Let's see, where were we? Hijackson hiding in plain sight from feds? Question mark. Oh, here's one. My headline from the Palm Beach Post. Unknown child drunk beat hero Alan West because Repubs gerrymandered his district. That's right. A guy who was arrested as a youth for drunk charges beat Alan West with almost no money. Why? Because Alan West was gerrymandered out of his job by the evil Republican Party. Don't for 1 minute believe that Alan West was fired because he's a Tea Party favorite. He's loved. He's a beloved man. He's an American hero. No one in the Republican Party that I know of could hold a candle to this man. And yet he lost because they didn't want anyone with any association, with any independent streak whatsoever, to ever be reelected again. Here's one for those of you who are interested in sex. ACLU sues to protect online privacy of sex offenders. Can you believe this? There was a ballot measure overwhelmingly approved in a liberal state, right, in California. Even psycho-left-wing California overwhelmingly passed a ballot initiative that would require sex offenders to turn over information about their internet accounts to police. Prop 35 overwhelmingly approved, right? But the evil, degenerate ACLU, all of whom should be arrested, deported, their assets seized, in my opinion, along with the evil, degenerate Electronic Frontier Foundation, all of whose members should be arrested, deported, and their assets seized, claimed that doing so to sex offenders would illegally stifle the free speech rights of sex offenders. This is astonishing. And they sued on behalf of an anonymous 75-year-old California pervert who was convicted of two sex offenses. And they said that the man fears retaliation and social stigma if he is unable to participate in online forums anonymously. In other words, he can't go after your child anonymously. He wants to name himself. It's unbelievable to me how the government, as evil as it is, does not close the ACLU down as an entity against the sanctity and sanity of the American people. It's unbelievable to me. And even the former chief privacy officer of Facebook and a supporter of this decent proposition called this lawsuit by the evil, disgusting, degenerate ACLU, quote, an attack on the very idea of sex offender registration requirements to protect kids and adults alike. He went on and he said the ACLU's claims have been previously litigated many times, and courts have repeatedly rejected their fanciful and dangerous misinterpretations of the Constitution. Well, good for him. Good for him. I'm not taking caller five. Please don't put up callers from hell. I'm not in the mood. The phone number here is 1-855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. I'll be back. And 987-654-321 is the Savage Nation. So I've been reading articles on michaelsavage.com. No one's calling on any topic that I mentioned, which is very intriguing. It's okay. It's the way it works. You listen to other shows all day, or your therapist, whoever calls shows at this hour, and you're asking me questions that have nothing to do with what I'm talking about, which will throw the show into the toilet. The main question is, which pundit or prognosticator was so wrong they should never be listened to again? You know, it's like a question in a seminar, so I gave you one answer, Karl Rove. Okay, now give me others. Now give me others. Okay, I'm the teacher. Give me others. Who did you listen to who was so wrong that you never want to see or hear from them again? Okay, let's start from the top. I pray to God this works. If not, I'll just change it up again. We're going to talk about McDonald's and why sales are dropping for the first time in a decade. I have my idea. You know, it's a funny thing. As sales are dropping in McDonald's, I'm starting to enjoy it for the first time in my life. I don't know. It's like a counterintuitive thing. Now that, first of all, it's not cool to eat there, so I eat there. I meet interesting people at McDonald's. I met people who just got out of San Quentin who were in the moving business. Talked to them on the line about the various offerings. Didn't bother me. They liked my dog. I met others who were recently sex offenders who were eating at McDonald's. Not bad people.
Call Michael right now at 855-400-SAVAGE. That's 855-400-7282.
Okay, Savage Nation, listen up. A lot has happened in the last 2 weeks. Big changes are coming in the next 2 weeks. Meanwhile, here's your assignment. Get and read The Great Debasement by Craig R. Smith. Look, for years I've told you the U.S. dollar is at high risk of crashing. Was I wrong? And hard money offers protection, no matter who wins the election. Mark Twain said the truth is stranger than fiction. Well, the same is true of The Great Debasement, which began a century ago with the creation of the Federal Reserve and income tax. What's the result? Today's dollar retains just 2 cents of its original buying power. Yes, progressive politicians have engineered the largest wealth confiscation in history. Learn what must be done to preserve your money now. And get this, I've secured a supply of The Great Debasement books for free. It's a $20 value. And for a limited time, to celebrate my new radio home, I can offer them free of charge. But you must call now, 800-289-2646. Write it down, 800-289-2646. 800-289-2646. 289-2646.
It is the Savage Nation. Wake up out there and enjoy the fall of America. You know, I predicted that Obama would win about a year ago. I said he would do it by two means. One was amnesty for illegal aliens, which he did. You forgot that because the weakling Romney wouldn't bring it up during the debates. He didn't have to answer the script, follow the script put out there by Candy Crowley and the other creatures from the Black Lagoon. He could have said, wait a minute, I have a question that I want to raise. Why did the president think he had the power to grant amnesty to 1.3 million illegal aliens? That would have brought the House down. It would have elected Romney. But that's what elected Romney. Elected Obama. You say, well, wait a minute, how do you know that? Because there were 3 million fewer Republican voters. There were 9 million fewer Democrat voters, right? Well, how does that math add up? There's a missing link in that discussion. And no one could figure it out but me, because I have a PhD, yes, and partly in epidemiology, which is about statistics. The missing statistic is this. Obama said it was 1.3 million illegals that were granted the amnesty, basically, through the so-called Dream Act. That means it was 2.6 or 3 million. God only knows how many. You say, well, they can't vote. Yes, they can. They then sued states that wanted voter ID. So all of these illegals voted for him. And that's almost the exact difference
in the popular vote in numbers. That's number one. Let's not get into the electoral side of it. It's too common. It's Byzantine. It's from another universe to figure that one out. But right off the bat, the popular vote would have been tied had there been no illegal aliens from the DREAM Act alone. But how many million other illegal aliens marched into the polls and voted like they own your country? The same way they speak their language and not your language. Take your welfare. I'm not going to stop on the Yemen. I don't care what John Boehner says. I could give a damn less what these drunks called Republicans think. They threw the election by pandering to the non-citizens. Now they're going to pander even more. Watch. You wait and see. I know what's going to happen. I know what happened when they passed Simpson-Mazzoli way back when in the 80s. They thought that the Hispanics would jump over to them. They got fewer Hispanics voting for them. They didn't learn their lesson. They don't care. Look, what could be better than blaming the other guy while, you know, doing the same thing the other guy's doing? Oh, yeah, it's them Democrats. They did it. Come on, it's a one-party system with two-card Monty here. That's all there is to it. It's never going to be fixed. It's impossible. You know, you may as well enjoy the ride and the slide. That's all. Just enjoy it. So who else should be thrown off the air and never listened to again? Who should be forced to teach gym in Arkansas for the rest of their life? Who should be prohibited from ever writing a book? Who should be banned from Fox News for the rest of their natural life? Who? I'm asking you, who was so wrong that you never want to hear from them again? You don't have an answer? I do. I have callers. Yeah. Carrie on KSFO in San Jose. Tell us your opinion on this subject.
My opinion is that Dick Morton...
Wait a minute. Your whole statement got chopped. Say it again.
I'm saying Dick Morris got it completely wrong. I mean, he put in the minds of people that it's going to be a landslide for Romney. Yeah.
You know, I like Dick Morris. He's been in my home about 2 years ago, but he was so wrong. And for a guy who makes his living on predictions, that's kind of embarrassing, right?
It is. And then one of the things that I'm kind of curious about, because we're never going to knock this out of the way unless the media is going to be dealt with. The media...
Are you kidding? You're going to deal with the most slimy element of American society, the people who destroyed the country?
Well, don't you think it should be...
Yeah, there should be a people's tribunal that I run. A people's tribunal of Wolf Blitzer, and he should be tried by the people in a people's court. And he should be tried for the crimes against humanity for what he committed. Candy Crowley, number one. Make her answer to the people. Just make her come up there in sackcloth.
I mean,
no makeup, just sackcloth. All right, what's your name? What's your name? Candy Crowley. All right. And what are you accused of? Throwing the election to Obama by various and sundry means. You know, what should the punishment be? How about putting her on a diet for the next 50 years?
It's treason.
To start with, and forcing her to live in Iran for the next 10 years. She can work for Iranian national television. Wolf Blitzer should be forced to be a newsman for Hamas. He may as well be. Wolf Blitzer would have been very happy working as, I can't even say it. It's a family show, but don't get my anger going. I don't want to get angry tonight. It's not good for me. Forget about you. I don't want to get angry. Who else should be thrown out and never listened to? St. Louis, Missouri. Thanks for calling a Savage Nation. Brian, you're next up.
Hey, Michael. I tell you what, Carl Rove. And Dick Morris. But I tell you, you rang something true, that idea of having them, you know, in a movie from World War II. You remember that old Charlie Chaplin spoof where he did a spoof on Germany, Nazi Germany? You remember that?
Yes, I did. It's called The Great Dictator.
What's that?
The Great Dictator, where he ridiculed Hitler.
There you go. That's it. They would be perfect in that. A remake of that.
But wait, what do you mean? You mean they would play the... Dick Morris would play what role in that movie?
Morris would probably play Goebbels, I would think. And Rove, I guess, would play Goering.
No, come on. Dick Morris is a nice guy. He just was all wrong because he's gotten too close to certain circles in Florida that talk to themselves. That's the problem. They don't go out of their own circles. Listen to me. I know what I'm saying. Lucky for me, I'm a misanthrope, and I basically don't talk to anybody. So I have an independent mind. I basically watch the world go around and come up with my own conclusions, and they're usually right. That's all. Okay, I know what you want. You want a copy of my book, Train Tracks. You got it. You got it. Anyone who gets on the air tonight, I'm giving them away.
Hey, Mike, No more.
That's it. Just put him on hold now and take his address. No double questions. Once you say you give him the book, that means goodbye, Charlie. I'm getting into the hour now. It's taking me. I'm back on the air in the later hour. It was hard for the first month. I'm not used to working in the dark. I feel like the night watchman. So I feel like a night watchman. I'm looking outside for light. And to top it off, it's already daylight savings time and the winter. My diurnal cycle is so off, it's frightening. I don't, no matter how many curtains I put in. I'm eating dinner at 9 o'clock. Well, that's not a bad idea. I used to do this in Florida. When I would go to Florida for the winter, I'd last about a week sometimes until I ran back to California, the state I love to hate. I almost moved out of here yesterday because they raised taxes again. I still might move. But then people said it isn't worth it. Let them steal more money from you and give it more to the illegal aliens and the unions. Give more to the union thugs so they can leave the roads broken and the criminals running wild in the streets, and give sex reassignment surgery to the perbs. That's all. Give more to Jerry Brown for those important issues. Who else was wrong? Birmingham, Alabama. Patrick, let's get even. Who else was wrong?
I'll tell you who was wrong. It was Frank Luntz, the focus group guy from Fox News. Was predicting a landslide victory.
Yeah, I don't like him either. I always thought he was a blowhard. I never liked him. He put himself up on a pedestal. All these statisticians were all wrong.
Exactly. Either he was right, or he was, and Obama completely rigged the election through the vote counting company SVYTL so hard.
That's right, but no one's even talking about that disclosure of mine of the SCYTL, which you read in Trickle Down Tyranny. No one's even talking about the vote counting company owned by George Soros in Spain. Didn't even enter the discussion. I'm sending you a copy of Train Tracks. That's all. Everyone's getting a copy tonight because most of you are too either. Look, you don't have the money, or you're cheap and you don't want to go to a bookstore and buy it. So I'll give it away for nothing tonight, everybody, you know. You know what I'm saying? Fremont, California, KSFO. Mark, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Hey, it's great to hear from you. I'm a first-time caller and first-time listener since you've come back out here. I'm enjoying the show a lot, just to let you know.
You mean you haven't heard me in 5 years? I was on 310 other stations, but okay. That's the problem for the insular listener. I'm glad you're listening. What's on your mind?
I'm going with Coulter.
You what?
I'm going with Coulter as somebody to get off the air. Was way wrong.
You're missing. Wait, I'm sorry. Start for the. Who should get off the air?
Coulter.
Ann Coulter. Why? What did she do?
Oh, she just was all over the map when she was also agreeing with and thinking that it was going to be a landslide, and then she was switching teams quite a bit.
Well, Ann is an intelligent. I don't know her personally. She always struck me as the gravel Gertie of the Republican Party. Now, you have to know the history of comic books to understand that phrase. She was a cohort of Popeye in a comic book.
back to your German statement, though.
If you know the old Popeye comics, the Popeye comics were still around when I was a young kid. That goes back a long way. But there was a character in the Popeye comics named Gravel Gertie that Ann Coulter is the gravel Gertie of Republican politics. I'm sorry.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Hey, she don't like
what
me.
About
I don't care.
What about
so she don't like me. I don't care that she doesn't like me. It's her loss. That's all. Don't you agree it's her loss, not mine?
Absolutely.
Yeah. What about, right, Mark, I'll tell you what. Here we go. Mark, you're a new listener again. You're a new old listener. If you can name my book that just came out, it's in the bookstores, I'll give you a free copy, my memoirs. What's the name of it?
Need to have a new face of the Republican Party. Though.
Again? No answer. Thanks for the call. I guess they can't hear me, but that's good. That's nice. You ask a question, they're still answering their own question. If you have a comment to make that's related to anything I said, I'll give you $10. The phone number is 855-400-7282. 855-400-SAVAGE. Let's take a few other callers on the Savage Nation. Manchester, New Hampshire. Julie, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I'd like to put Ann Coulter on that list.
She was just on the list. Didn't you hear the last
sorry.
Call?
I was calling in. I'm sorry.
Okay, why do you think Ann Coulter should be put on the list of pundits who were so wrong they should never be listened to again?
I think what she's doing now as well, pushing the conservatives, that we need to change our narrative to make us more moderate.
Wait, oh, wait a minute. She said that?
Yes.
Wait, that conservatives need to change their philosophy in order to be acceptable to the liberals?
Absolutely. She said that today.
On whose show?
I'm trying to remember.
Well, I guess she's becoming irrelevant. I guess she's been out there she's been so far out for so long she hasn't understood that now she's on the Arctic ice, which is drifting away from the sea altogether.
Absolutely.
Julie, I'm sending you a copy of my new memoir book, if you can name the title. What's the title? No one knows. Right. See, if you can't name the book Train Tracks, I can't give it to you. If you name it Train Tracks, then I'll give it to you. You want me to read from it? If anybody wants me to read from Train Tracks, is there anyone out there who actually bought the book who would like to hear something from it? I'll do that. We are not picking at the bones of defeat like some were doing all day today. It's over. It's over. Forget about it. It's over. Forget about it. It's four more tears. That's all there is to it. Live with it. Accept it. You don't have a party that represents you if you're a conservative. You never did. It's over. You know, the Republican Party is supposed to be the conservative party. As in England, they have a Labour Party, which is a communist socialist party. And then they have the Tories, the Schmories. They're supposed to be the conservative party. We don't have that. We don't have a conservative party here. The Republicans of today are the liberals of yesterday. The Democrats of today are the CPUSA of the 50s. The Communist Party USA of the 50s was not as brazen with their intent as is Obama and his minions. You don't understand that. But I do. I've been around a lot longer than most of my listeners, and I've studied politics. Everything has shifted. There's been a word. I don't want to use the wrong word. This is a big shift. Let's put it that way. A big shift. So the Republican Party of today is And the Democrat Party of today is the CPUSA of the 50s, Communist Party USA. The same platform as Obama. And the Republicans are the liberal Democrats of the 50s. There is no conservative party. The country's moved so far to the left that you don't even understand there's no party representing the conservatives in the country. You say, well, there shouldn't be because there aren't enough for you. That's not true. But again, I don't want to beat a dead horse. You know all about that. Okay, so here we are. I want a people's tribunal for journalists, who I call stenographers. When I'm in a good mood, I call them stenographers. When I'm in a bad mood, I call them by other names such as vermin, etc. If there was a people's tribunal of people like Candy Crawley, Brian Williams, Wolf Blitzer, could you imagine what a pay-per-view that would be, what that would draw? How much would you pay to watch Candy Crawley tried by the people and have her come up there in sackcloth without makeup and cry before three judges who call her on the carpet for what she did to the people? Posing as a journalist, and then bring some of those other characters who think that they're God Almighty. My personal favorite would be Wolf Blitzer. I don't know why. I know Candy Crawley is what she is. She can't help herself. There's the old story of the frog and the scorpion. She's just the scorpion type. She can't help herself. But Wolf Blitzer gives me the creeps. If I were doing a movie about the 19th, well, I shouldn't do it. It's almost too mean. I can be very mean when I want to. I shouldn't. He was given a mean break at birth, so I'll let it go at that. Just being born Wolf Blitzer, I would say, was enough of a handicap that I don't have to put him down. Okay? Adriana, KSFO, San Jose, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, we need to get Mark Levine off the radio. I hear him copy a lot
Wait. Hold it. Here's the problem. I am now a member of the Cumulus Broadcast Group. I'm not going to put anyone down who is an other member. But now, if you have a comment to make about Levin that you don't like, go ahead. I'm not going to put any words in your mouth. Hello?
Okay. I agree. Don't put words in my mouth then.
So what is it that he's saying that offends you?
Well, what offends me is he copies a lot of your material, and if he can't make up his own facts or get his own
information. Well, okay, that's right. You can't, that's right. Many people imitate Michael Savage. I know that. But that's the thing is when you're an original, you're an original. And that I cannot justify by any means.
No, absolutely not. I agree.
Well, I'm glad you're so protective of me. Apparently, you're a long-term listener, right?
I try to be as much as I possibly can, but I really do feel like I should be more of a listener.
Wow. Okay, I'll tell you what. I'm going to give you a loyalty oath right now. If you can name my new book of memoirs, you're going to get a free copy. What's it called?
Train Tracks.
All right. There it is. You see how easy that was? Stay on the line. We'll send you a free copy. And I feel better now. A little less heart pain in the middle of the night. A little less fear in the middle of the night that I won't wake up in the morning. It's so awful, the whole thing about mortality. It's the most horrendous problem on earth that no one can solve. Nobody. I see guys jogging, running, fish oils, vitamins, taking their vital signs. It doesn't matter. Just forget about it. Do the best you can. Try to control your diet. Exercise less. Sleep more. Worry less. Drink more wine. Have a little garlic. Take a lot of vitamin C and a lot of vitamin E. Laugh at everybody around you because everyone's a fraud, including yourself. You'll feel better. You'll live longer. All these poor guys in their 30s, they've left their youth behind. They think that by jogging 30 miles a day, bicycling, looking like... I never saw anything like the costumes they wear. They look like jesters on the bicycles here on these back roads of San Francisco. Why must they wear, I'm a bicycle rider. Why do they have to buy a jester costume to go along with it? And why must they put their disgusting behinds in your face with high seats like the jockeys? Why? 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 You know the answer why. Because that's why they're on a bicycle. They ride two abreast in tandem. They're not allowed to, by the way. I spoke to the California Highway Patrol. I didn't know that till last week. I was very pleasantly surprised that if they're going slower than traffic, those bums from San Francisco who come here just to get the Romney voters mad in Marin County or wherever you live in what suburb, they're breaking the law. You can honk them. You can tell them to go to you know where as you go by. You can't threaten them. You can't squirt them with a water gun with acid. I'm sorry, you can't do that. And they're not allowed to attack you either, incidentally. Tell him to get over and do a single file like a normal bicycle rider.
Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Well, here he is. That's me, I guess. It's the Savage Nation. And we're talking about various and sundry, including which pundit or prognosticator was so wrong they should never be listened to again. And we've named Karl Rove. People have named others. And then somebody brought up Ann Coulter, who I really don't listen to her. I know she's clever and all that. And I called her the Gravel Gertie of Republican politics. And people don't know who Gravel Gertie was. And then I made a mistake. I said that Gravel Gertie was in the Popeye comic strip. But I was wrong. My friend Dr. Sarfati corrected me. He just sent me a picture of the original cartoon. She was in the Dick Tracy comics from the 1940s, before my time. But, you know, I came in on the fumes of that. And if you look at Gravel Gertie, if you look it up on the internet, you will see this about her. First appeared on August 31st, 1944. And here's their description. It says, Gravel Gertie was a woman who lived in a gravel pit in a rural area outside Dick Tracy City. She was depicted as extremely homely, but bulging eyes, crooked teeth, a wiry figure, and a hairy or possibly pockmarked upper lip. She does, however, have long silky hair and a beautiful singing voice. She's also skilled at playing the mandolin. Now, for whatever reason it is, I don't understand, it could be my childish inner persona, always identifies Ann Coulter with that character. I don't know why. I have no idea why. And I hope it doesn't stick. Olive Oil was the cartoon character in Popeye. I never liked Olive Oil, main character for years. I never liked her, even as a kid. I love comic strips as a little boy, to be honest with you. I grew up on them. I like Scrooge McDuck better than I like Donald Duck for one reason. Scrooge got to roll around in a bathtub full of gold coins. Donald, unfortunately, I think was eaten for Christmas. I mean, if you're going to be a duck, wouldn't you rather be a rich duck who swims in a bathtub full of gold? It's the Savage Nation. So I was interviewed this morning by a local scribe, and I'm going to read you two questions. It'll be published somewhere. I don't know. Okay, here it is. Question one. What mistakes did the Romney... No, what, question one, why did Obama win? Two, what mistakes did the Romney campaign make? So my answer is one and two. Answer. Obama did not win so much as Romney lost. Obama is the most divisive of modern presidents, the least competent. Romney was a weak candidate who stood for nothing. He abandoned the conservatives who stayed home. 3 million fewer repubes voted than voted in 08. His campaign advisors were quislings who hated conservatives. They told him to be nice to Obama, to avoid mentioning the Fort Hood massacre, the death of our Libyan ambassador, owing to Obama's refusal to answer the calls for air support and other military help, gun running into Mexico by Obama's Justice Department, the Solyndra and other fake solar company scandals that received hundreds of millions in federal Energy Department grants, Obama's refusal to pass the Keystone Oil Pipeline from Canada in order to appease Warren Buffett, who brings the oil in on his rail cars, to name just a few scandals. See that little short list? That could have won Romney the election. He didn't mention any of them, not once. Next question. He asked me this. Where's the country headed? Here's my answer. One paragraph. Not an encyclopedia. Where's the country headed? Michael Savage's answer. More centralized planning of our lives from cradle to grave. More red tape from useless corrupt government agencies. More racial division. More hostility to success. More appeasement of the Islamo-fascist world. Higher taxes for productive workers, more food stamps and welfare. That's all. Finally, he said, you're back in your home market on KSFO in San Francisco. How do you feel? My answer is, I helped put KSFO on the radio map in 94-95 and love the feel of being back. I especially like the callers' warmth, and they're loving my newly published book, Train Tracks, which contains all my favorite family stories without any politics. That's all. End of story. Now let's take your callers. Who else should be thrown off the air forever and never be seen again? I mean, it's a long list. It's not a short list. It's a long list. They're horrible. Forget the liberals. We know who they are. Candy Crawley, Wolf Blitzer, you name them all. Brian Williams. It doesn't matter. We know them. I'm talking about on our side, guys who are completely wrong. Who? Indianapolis. Brian, who's on your list?
Yeah, I'd say that on Fox News, you have Pat Caddell and Doug Showen. They're old line Democrats. They really don't care for Obama much. But you can tell that even they were suckered into believing that Obama would lose and that Romney was some kind of savior for conservatives. They're both bums because they're just going along with the party line because they have their own.
See, they had to say, in order to maintain their cred, their credibility, whatever it may be, whatever shred of credibility they think they've established with the so-called Republican set, they had to join the homily that Romney was going to win.
Right, absolutely. And the only thing that is going to keep them on the air now is just for them to
Pat Caddell and guys like Pat Caddell are practicing the oldest profession. There's a word for it, I believe, that I would rather not repeat on a family show, but you know what the world's oldest profession is, I'm sure, correct?
Oh, of course, the night walkers.
All right, so Pat Caddell belongs to the world's oldest profession, as do many of the other prognosticators on Fox News. Brian, you're getting a free copy of my new memoir book, if you can name the title. What is it? Not there, gone. All right.
Train Tracks. Gone.
Sajak?
Train Sajak. Tracks.
Ajax, the cleanser? Oh, Train Tracks, yes. Yes, if you name it, you gain it. That's it. You're getting Train Tracks sent out to you tomorrow, a little 5x8 small book the size of a pocket Bible to bring to family gatherings such as Thanksgiving and Christmas. Throw on the table and read to children. Make people listen to you about Michael Savage's wonderful conservative views. There's no politics in it. That's the funny part. It's all about the hard scrabble life of a young man growing up in America, an immigrant son, who still works. Works. Well, I don't even know why I work anymore. It's like in my DNA. People say to me, why are you working? What is wrong with you? You have sufficient resources, Michael, to retire. Why didn't you retire years ago? What makes you get up in the morning and work 12 hours a day until you go on the radio when you work another 3 hours? Why? Why do you do it? And the answer is because it's in my DNA. It's encoded in me. So then one really, this got me yesterday. This got me a little, I was sick like all night. Someone said to me, you made no difference at all. Said, you wrote your books called Poverty, Trickle Down Tyranny. You did years of radio shows disclosing who Obama was, and he won anyway. So basically, you're useless. That was a nice statement. That was a good one. That was called a gut punch. So I thought about it. And that's like saying to a guy who lost the battle but fought valiantly that he shouldn't have fought the battle. Now, does that make sense to you? No, I fought the battle because it needed to be fought. And I will continue to tell you about the dangers of socialism, communism, whatever you want to call it, because it's all accurate. It's only by degree, and it depends upon which of his decrees you're talking about, whether they are socialistic or communistic. That's the funny part. So the thing is, I'll continue to fight the good fight, come what may. As I said to you the other night when we knew we lost, here's the shot. I did the best I could. I slept well that night. But then I got punched in the guts the next day by someone close to me who said, you made no difference, why are you working? I mean, you want to talk about questions that try men's souls. Try that one on for size. And I had to sort it. You know, I really sorted through that question, and there was my answer. Because just because you lost doesn't mean you shouldn't have fought. That's some defeatist attitude. So you don't fight at all, then what kind of country do you think we'd have? If there weren't millions of people willing to work to expose this corrupt, divisive administration, we'd be in much worse shape than we're in right now, incidentally. And by the way, we have to continue to fight them more than ever, incidentally. Not from day one. Give it a breather. Give it a breather. Take a breath. It's too early to start the battle immediately. John Boehner has to go. You want me to start the top of the list? Send that drunk back to Youngstown. Let him go to work as a PR agent for a steel plant in China. Get rid of him. But other than that, I mean, you want to talk about it. The whole Republican Party needs to be deported to China. They'd be much happier working in Beijing, who they work for anyway. Scranton, Pennsylvania, WILK, Andy, I love Scranton. What's on your mind?
Hey, I just want to make a comment about, I don't think anybody's brought him up, Rush Limbaugh. I believe he's one of them that should be chucked off the airwaves, and the reason
This is interesting. What did Rush do that was antagonistic to you? I don't understand that one.
Well, the thing is, I mean, my opinion is he's one of the ones on the long line that seems like he pretends to know what he's talking about because he's paid to. Not like somebody like you who actually knows what the heck they're talking about.
Well, let me ask you something. Of course I like the compliment, but before we bash Rush, did Romney go on Rush's show?
Not that I know of.
Romney went on Wallbanger's show, I'm pretty sure of that. And Romney did not certainly refuse to have anything to do with my show, which is very intriguing because the number of millions of listeners I had, you would think, since he was pandering to Hispanic factory workers who weren't even citizens, the guy went to bowling alleys to talk to people who couldn't even vote, but he wouldn't talk to my audience. How many of you didn't vote for Romney because he wouldn't come on the show? You want to really get something going? Call the show if you specifically didn't vote for him because he wouldn't come on the Savage Nation. I could get 1,000 calls between now and January 1 on that issue alone. You know?
Yeah.
Okay, Andy, would you like a copy of my new book? You have to name it if you do.
I would love a copy of your book. It sounds very interesting. It's called Train Tracks.
You got it. You see? The man, straight up. That's all. It's a good show. I was going to play some sound that I have for you that's so good I have to save it for Friday because I'm starting to enjoy the show. What's wrong with me? What is wrong with me? I'm feeling empowered. I love this time of year. I don't know about you. I like November. It got cold here. We went from a heat wave where I almost died the other day. It was so hot on Tuesday. I went out in a little boat I have. I was burning up. It was worse than Florida. It was one of those hot days that if the sun hit you from the wrong angle, you had a migraine for 4 hours. The next day, like an Arctic breeze came in, an Arctic front. I'm now wearing winter clothes with a turtleneck, which I like. Because I sleep more, I can drink red wine again. I mean, again, I'm a strange guy. I cannot drink red wine in hot weather. I don't understand. I'm not into sangria. I'm into good red wine. I can't drink it in hot weather. I get a triple migraine. impossible to cure, an impossibly incurable headache from red wine in hot weather. Cold weather, I can drink a half a bottle of red. So tonight, the minute the show is over, I feel like a dog about to get a greenie. You know those things they sell for dogs called greenies? What the heck is in them? My dogs are addicted to them. Is there a dog lover out there who could tell me what they put in those packages? There's a package, a dog treat called a greenie. My dog's like a junkie. If I feed him, I can give him top-of-the-line chicken with the chips or the carrots. He gets on the rear legs, the little poodle, and he starts walking around looking like a bear, a teddy bear. He dances around the kitchen, sticking his nose up in the air near the sink. He smells him through a closed package in a plastic bag. He smells the greenie. What do they put in that? I would like a chemist to call the show and tell me what drug they're putting in greenies. I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Just remember this. Obama won, but he doesn't have a mandate because he didn't run for anything. He didn't run on a platform. The president does not have a mandate. He did not run on a platform. He ran on attack, an attack message. David Axelrod, his brain, is a very brilliant tactician. But Obama has no mandate. Now, there are other people who are 100% so wrong they should never be listened to. Gallup and Rasmussen should retire. It's time to change Gallup and Rasmussen's power to something else. Both of them should go out of business. They were wrong. They didn't even make. They weren't even in the top 20 of being right. Why listen to them? You know, Dallas, Texas, KLIF. Tom, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hey, Michael. I wanted to share with you a discovery I made this morning. I was so disappointed over this election. So disappointed. I told my wife, I don't understand this. I don't know how long it's going to take me to get over this. You know, we have disappointments. You can get over them in an hour, 2 hours a day. And then I discovered, really, it's not a disappointment. I'm in mourning. Everything I knew about this country when I grew up, everything I understood about the country and what it meant to be an American, the value of being an American, all has been thrown out the window, and it's probably never coming back. So when people are in mourning, I don't know how long it's going to take me. It could take me a year, 2 years, three. I may never get over this. The other thing, mistakes of Romney, when Obama was hugging Governor Christie in pseudo-campaigning, Romney was telling people to mail money to the Red Cross. Third thing, like your previous caller, guy that should not be listened to or at least believed too much, I agree, Rush Limbaugh. He was saying, don't believe the polls. They're polling Democrats. They're flawed. Trust me, if you're going to listen to this and you're going to get all depressed, don't listen to it, he said. Don't listen to it. You're going to get depressed.
Well, I have a new name for Rush Limbaugh, if you'd like to hear it. My friend Dr. Sarfati just made it up. Rush Limbaugh.
That's Rush the guy.
Rush Limbaugh. That should stick now for the rest of his career. You can call him that. You could say you heard it first in the Savage Nation and that Jack Sarfati created it. Rush Limbaugh.
The Savage Nation, it's going to stick, I'll tell you that.
Look, here's the thing, Tom. I can understand your disappointment, your depression, but the problem is you're taking it too personally. It wasn't against you. It was against America. The values of America have been eroded. They've been crucified by the media. The media crucified America. The Democrat Party has disrobed America and disgraced her. To be very blunt, I could be even more blunt if this were not a family program on the public airwaves of what they've done to Lady Liberty. I think you get the picture. Now, you have several choices as to how to react to this. Your first reaction is actually a correct one because it's an emotional reaction. And those who are emotional will actually get over it faster than those who are in denial. You know that, don't you? Gone already. I'm talking to my. It's like a therapist. He turns around. The patient's gone for the. I was talking to a guy. I looked at him. Now he's hung up and not there. The call screen. I was talking to someone. It's like a therapist. I'm like the Freud of the airwaves. I'm the political Freud. It was a very good point I was making. Those who are emotionally upset over the election will get over it faster than those who are in denial. That's all I can tell you. So that means I'll never get over it because I'm not emotionally upset over it. I'm having a good time because to me, I have a crazy sense of humor. I have a gallows sense of humor. When things go horribly wrong, I get happy. There's nothing I could do about that. It's how I've coped with tragedy in my life from the beginning. I don't laugh at funerals, don't get me wrong, but What are you going to do about it? Even though I'm not Irish, I like the idea of a wake. They eat and they drink over the dead body. So eat, drink, and be merry.
Call Michael right now at 855-400-SAVAGE. That's 855-400-7282.
Okay, Savage Nation, listen up. A lot has happened in the last 2 weeks. Big changes are coming in the next 2 weeks. Meanwhile, here's your assignment. Get and read The Great Debasement by Craig R. Smith. Look, for years I've told you the U.S. dollar is at high risk of crashing. Was I wrong? And hard money offers protection, no matter who wins the election. Mark Twain said the truth is stranger than fiction. Well, the same is true of the Great Debasement, which began a century ago with the creation of the Federal Reserve and income tax. What's the result? Today's dollar retains just 2 cents of its original buying power. Yes, progressive politicians have engineered the largest wealth confiscation in history. Learn what must be done to preserve your money now, and get this, I've secured a supply of the Great Debasement books for free. It's a $20 value, and for a limited time, to celebrate my new radio home, I can offer them free of charge. But you must call now, 800-289-2646. Write it down, 800-289-2646.
That's
enough. Thank you very much. So I'll take callers, that's all. Instead of talking about the election, I'll take your calls. And if you get the name of my new memoirs right, which came out yesterday instead of every bookstore, I'm very proud of it. I'll give you a free copy, which pundit or prognosticator was so wrong they should never be listened to again. We have a long list. You know, I told you before the election, that after this election, there's going to be a shaking out, not only in the media amongst conservatives, which is happening as I speak, but in the radio business. And I don't know who's going to last another year. I hope I'm amongst those who last. I hope that my versatility of topics will sufficiently charm the audiences for me to become, not only stay on the air, but become bigger. Because I absolutely want to be the number one talk show host in America. I want to be the last man standing. I knew that from the day I started. I had one goal in mind, which was to be number one. It's only 20 years. I mean, I have a Chinese view of the world. It doesn't matter how long it takes. I'm willing to put up with anything to get what I want. You don't know that about me. I've had impediments in my way that I don't want to cry about. They've been pretty severe. And, I wait them out, and many of my enemies are now out of the business. People who try to destroy me are no longer in radio, and I want to be number one. You say, why? Because I want to, because my talent demands it. So I want to be one of the last men standing, and I hope with your listenership I shall survive. That's all. I'm talking to you straight up front. You say, well, what do you got to offer that the other people don't? You'll have to decide for yourself. You know, here's the funny thing is, you know who has all the power now? You. This is the funny part. Do you know who has all the power now? Not the politicians. We're talking about our side of the aisle. Forget about the other side. They don't exist right now. We're in our own world. In terms of the so-called conservative side of the media, you have all the power. You're going to determine who thrives and who dies. Only you, by your listenership. Now, I personally will tell you, I can't listen anymore to the same story that I've heard now for years. I can't take it. I know I turn it off. If I hear it, I turn it off. So unless there's a capability for versatility, forget about it. I don't see how it can survive. And you have to remember something. Radio is primarily an entertainment medium. You don't understand this. You must understand that it's not a part of the Republican Party, as Rush Limbaugh thinks it is. The radio business is not an extension of the Republican Party any more than the major media is an extension of the Democrat Party. It is not supposed to be an extension of the two-party system. It's become that because they bought them, you know, lock, stock, and barrel. These are primarily, radio in particular, is an entertainment medium. We know that with television, obviously, but radio has to be entertaining in order to keep your attention. And fortunately for me, I have the entertainment gene in me. I know it was born in me. I've always been good at it, and I hope I can charm you, you know, and if I can't, I can't. So I'll go by the way of the rest of them. You'll never hear from me. I will leave like Jack Benny did. Or I don't know what it is. I'm enjoying it more than ever before on the Savage Nation. I'll take your callers if you want. Honolulu, Hawaii, Mark, what's on your mind tonight?
Yeah, I think that Michael Medved should be removed from the radio.
I don't know who he is, but what did he do?
Okay, before the election, he published a book titled The Odds Against Obama, Why History and Logic Make the President a Likely Loser. My argument is this. History and illogic made Obama a winner.
You're very good. But you see, this character you mentioned is a non-player. He's not a player. No one knows him. I really don't know who he is. I kind of heard the name once. I think his father owned a funeral parlor in Topeka. But I don't quite know who the man is. Another self-important, so-called blowhard from the conservative side. Morris County, New Jersey, the land of the storm. Dane, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Uncle Mike, it's a pleasure.
Thank you.
I think it's time now to start your nationalist party that you've talked about. I know you put it aside with the banning in Britain. I think it's time now, you and Trump and Alan West, get some money together. I think it's time now to seriously sit down and start.
You know, that's a very, see, here's the problem with a third party. As much as I would love to do it, and as much as I know that if I did create the Nationalist Party and I helped candidates such as Alan West, that we could get probably 12 to 18% of the vote, which means that we would assure a communist victory for the rest of the century. Because all we would be doing would be stealing votes from the frail, dying Republican Party. You know, Dane, we're never going to change them. That's their problem.
Yeah.
These old men, these ossified old men. And, you know, I may even chronologically be older than some of them, but they're much older than me mentally. See, I'm a young person mentally and spiritually. These guys are chronologically younger than me, the Republicans, but they're kind of an ossified group, wouldn't you say?
I would definitely say that. And, you know, 4 years is so far away. I'm so worried about what's going to change. Are we ever going to be able to elect another Republican again?
Well, my biggest fear, I predicted Obama would grant amnesty to illegals, and he did, and that's one of the reasons he won. It's one of the reasons all the polls were off is because they weren't counted. See, all the pollsters may not have been that wrong, but they were not interviewing the illegal aliens. You understand that? Nobody's willing to say that. All the geniuses can't figure it out, but I understand this because I have a PhD which includes a big segment in epidemiology, which is statistical analysis. I'm blessed because I have a great education. How can the pollsters have been so wrong? Well, maybe they weren't. But if you can't interview illegal aliens because they're not citizens and then they vote, so your polls are off. How's that? See, when you say likely voter, how can you go to an illegal alien who's not a likely voter? He's not even a citizen. But Obama had him in his pocket, right? Well, how many were there? 10,000, 100,000, 1 million, 2 million? We don't know, do we?
And, you know, it was only that
but
close.
I'm not finished. That's the prelude. Now, here's the rest of the story. I predicted he would grant amnesty to illegals, which he did. I'll predict something else. I don't know the likelihood of him getting away with it. He's going to try to eliminate term limits. He is going to try to eliminate a two-term presidency and make it a lifetime presidency. Now, he's not going to call it that. He's going to float it. And you mark my words, the very same rats in the media who put him in power are going to say it's not a bad idea. The first one to line up will be that, I got to check my words, that Wolf Blitzer, the Judenrat. Wolf Blitzer will be the first one to line up and pose the question. Following right up on that will be Candy Crawley, the reptile from the Black Lagoon, from the swamp. She'll come out of the Black Lagoon again and say, what do you think about eliminating term limits? Isn't it fair that people should have the kind of leadership that they want? Why should we limit the popularity of an individually excellent candidate? There should be no term limits. What's the likelihood of that happening? Probably good, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There it is. So there's Michael's second prediction, that he is going to try and do it. The anointed one will try to get away with this. So, name it and you gain it. What's the name of my new book?
Train Tracks.
Bingo! Stay on the line. A copy will be sailing out to you. Unfortunately, my listeners don't have the money to go buy it. No, come on. They bought all my other books. It'll be fine. Again, most of my excess revenue goes to supporting animal rights activities. I don't mean insects, and I don't mean mice in laboratories, although I have nothing against mice. I once lost a fellowship in graduate school because I wouldn't kill mice. I know you say, well, what are you, soft on mice? Yeah, I was soft on mice. I got to like them. If you work late enough in a laboratory, you get to like even the lab animals. No, you saw things come out in people you wouldn't believe. There was a girl there, she's a midget. No, I'm not nothing against midgets. Small people are small. She was a sadistic woman. She liked killing the mice. I couldn't stand it. So I was on a $300 a month fellowship. I had no money. I couldn't say anything. But then the day came when they said to me, okay, you have to now start killing the mice for experimental purposes. I said, I'm not going to do it. He said, you are going to do it, the professor. I said, I will not do it. I'm not killing them. He said, well, either you kill them or I'm throwing you out of the department. You're going to lose your fellowship. You'll have no money. I said, goodbye. I walked out. I've walked out of many things in my life that I wouldn't do. You don't understand that. I had nothing. And you know what? You want to hear something? Everything I ever left on principle without anything waiting for me over the horizon, and it's happened recently again, in every case, I wound up better off than I was before. You don't understand this. Although it's considered courageous to walk out of something that offends you morally or spiritually or whatever, and not have anything waiting for you, usually you'll wind up doing something that's better and more lucrative. Maybe not the next day, but you'll wind up in a better place. In either case, you'll be a better person for it, I can guarantee you. You'll be able to breathe a little easier. You'll live longer. You won't hate yourself for being a compromised sellout. I had it once with a corporate job that no one knows about. I never told that story. It's too late at night. It's another day. I have been given $500,000 in stock options in a company if I would stay there and work with them. I said, okay, and I was ready to move to that state. That city, this is before radio. The next day, the CFO, the CEO's son, who was a 28-year-old monster, was given the job because he was the CFO's CEO's son. He came in and he made demands on me that were inhuman. I left the room. I said goodbye. I went up to the guy who had the day before granted me $500,000 in stock options. This is 20 years ago. It was a lot of money then. Maybe it's nothing to you now. It was a lot of money then. And I said, I'm leaving. He said, wait a minute. You just negotiated $500,000 in stock options. Why are you leaving? I said, it's an untenable working situation. It will never get better. I'm leaving. I swear to God, I went to the corporate lawyer. There was no anger. I didn't want to get a lawyer. I didn't want to sue. We worked out a deal. I signed a paper. They gave me boom, left. I had nothing. Zero waiting for me. And do you know what happened afterwards? I sent tapes out to 450 radio stations about 6 months, within a 6 month period. And that's how I got into radio. It was after that. See, I didn't know I was going to go into radio. So the lab animal thing, I wouldn't kill the mice. He threw me out of the department. By the way, that professor later died of brain cancer. I'm not saying karma. Could happen to anybody. Could happen to good people who didn't kill lab animals. But in his case, he got brain cancer. I didn't say it was karma. But nevertheless, I wouldn't kill the lab rats. That's how I got into botany. I said, well, I'll go into another science because I don't have to kill, you know, plants are not going to be the same thing. I don't hear them talking to me. Like in the middle of the night, well, don't kill me. Don't eat me. Don't eat the celery. I didn't hear any of that. So I collected plants because I felt, okay, whatever. So that's how I got into ethnobotanical research, which led to a whole other, you know, a whole road in my life. God, it's like a cat has nine lives. Each one of these stories is years of my life. I'm starting to feel like Methuselah here telling you these stories. But each one is connected. I'm going to tell you right now, in my destiny, each one is an element of destiny, and each one is part of the train tracks that I write about in my memoirs, because it's a train track. Here, I'll put it another way. Aldous Huxley, who I hero worship when I was 18 to 20, I read every book he wrote. I read every short story. I researched magazine articles he had written on furniture in England. That's how much I fell in love with his writing. I thought he was the greatest mind on the planet. After I read Brave New World, nobody could talk to me about anything but Aldous Huxley. You know, I get that way. I get fanatic about things. I haven't in a long time. I guess I'm older and more jaded. But I read Huxley, and Huxley wrote this. He said, life must be lived forward, but it can only be understood backward. That has stuck with me forever. And that's what I'm telling you. You have to go forward, but you may not know what you're doing exactly. But if you follow your lodestone, meaning your conscience and your higher principles, it's always going to work out for you. Always. Always trust me on this. Don't stay in a job that you hate. It will kill you. It will kill you. It will eat your, it'll destroy you. I don't care what the money is. You'll die. Ask any lawyer who left the profession. They could have been making millions of dollars a year. Many of them leave and open a coffee shop. They don't want to do it anymore because the profession kills them. I'm giving you one example. And they may be happier and they'll live longer. They may be a better person. They may make more money, make less, but they're going to be a different person, probably closer to who they really are. So what I'm saying is, if I could give any advice in a generic way to people who are listening, if you're still listening to me at this hour, you're listening for a reason, and that's partly because you like what I have to say, you like me politically, whatever, you're trying to hang on to something. But there's another element to it, which is I have a fanatical following amongst a large number of people that is, you know, rebuilding now because it's with a new syndication company, and I'm rebuilding my syndication, et cetera. Hey, I got to tell you something. After I won that lawsuit in that two-year arbitration that cost me a fortune with my last radio syndicator, I had nothing waiting necessarily. I didn't have anything that was clearly waiting for me. I didn't know what was going to come. And here I am. I think it was God's hand again. This is where I belong. Thanks for listening. I'll be right back. It is the Savage Nation. So again, I know you want to hear a prognostication and this and that. I've been doing it. But I'm going to explain to you again why so many intelligent pundits appear to have been wrong about the election. But none of them seem to have either the ability to understand even why they were caught off guard or why they were not wrong. And I'm going to say it to you again. Most of the, all the polls were based upon likely voters, right? Is an illegal alien a likely voter? No. They couldn't even call them, could they? Can you call an illegal alien who's in America illegally? No. How do you call them? They're not registered, correct? So follow Michael Savage's logic. They're the hidden reason that all the pollsters were wrong. There are millions of them. Not only the millions that Obama openly granted amnesty to with the so-called Dream Act, but the millions who are here illegally who have no right to vote, but because the illegal, illicit, immoral Democrat Party fought the states that wanted a strict voter ID requirement in order to vote, with the only Western nation that doesn't require it, that is how they got the election again. It's the missing link. And that may allow the Dick Morrises of the world to save their hide. The question is, will they actually come to that conclusion after they heard it on my show or it filters back to them? I doubt it. And you know why? They're afraid of being called anti-Hispanic. But either you want facts and you want to use logic or you don't. And if you don't want to use facts and logic, then don't. That's all. It's as simple as that. That's my opinion. And it's hard logic, you know. People say that logic is, my logic is infallible, and usually is when I apply it. It's like a laser beam. What else would explain why so many polls like Rasmussen, Gallup, Dick Morris, experts in the field were so wrong? They haven't been wrong before like this. They've corrected for so many errors before. Why were they so wrong? Because all of the polls did not one poll included illegal aliens. They couldn't reach them. How could you reach someone who's not here? So how could someone who's not here vote? They go in and vote. Vote a key. My polling booth in California said vote a key. I was offended. I live in America. I don't live in a bilingual nation. We never voted for a bilingual ballot. Never. San Francisco has a ballot in 16 languages. How do you think this illegitimate, fetid cesspool continues to operate with such corruption, San Francisco? It's impossible for a legitimate candidate to win in San Francisco. That's how they keep getting reelected. Put it in 16, 18 languages, stuff the ballots, bring in people who don't even, not citizens. That's all. That's how it works. So what do you want to talk about in the Savage Nation? Go to my website, by the way, before I leave. You got to go to 185, phone number, you know, 400-SAVAGE, that you know, 855-400-SAVAGE. But the website you really have to go to every night to get the free newsletter, michaelsavage.com. If you go there, you register for free. And you get a like weekly newsletter for nothing, which is good. It's like a little summary of the show. And if you wish to be heard and have a great holiday, buy it now. Buy Train Tracks now while it's still in the stores, because I know you're going to love it for the holidays. Okay? 855-400-SAVAGE. Good phone number, right? New York, New York. Chris, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Michael, you may be right about the illegal alien turnout. But what makes it even tragically worse is John Boehner. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, the very next day, we lose a close election, and the man's already calling for working with Obama to grant amnesty, because that's what it amounts to.
Yes. Well, John Boehner has got to go. He's got to go. John Boehner has been a terribly weak whip or leader, House leader. And we need someone as tough as Nancy Pelosi on the right side. Emphasis on the word right. It's the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
I went up to a mountain this morning. I normally bicycle in the morning, not early, late in the morning, after I've done all my emails and had the breakfast and calculated how much cholesterol versus how much fish oil versus how much vitamin E versus how many milligrams of this and milligrams of that before I titrated my body ready for another day on the slopes of America. Then I go out in a bike ride, but I didn't want to ride today. I'm bored out of my mind. So I hiked up a mountain in the San Francisco Bay Area because it's eerily like a very, very spring day here. There's no rain. People are enjoying the weather naturally, and myself included. And so I go up to an eerily quiet mountain in the Bay Area and hike by myself. And I look at the rocks, and I try to say to myself, Michael, you're a trained scientist. You're in the media, which is a pretty low-life job to begin with. You try to elevate the dialogue to a certain extent in what you do. You don't succeed, obviously, because the people only want to hear the mud. They don't want to hear about anything above the layer at the bottom of the ocean. They want to lay with the crustaceans, because apparently the politicians today are like crustaceans. Zero leadership. And I look at this, and I realize that the rocks I'm looking at on top of this mountain, these bluish rocks, were a result of a cataclysm that began about 165 million years ago. And they were thrown up into the air, onto the surface of the earth at that time, onto the top of this mountain. You say, well, wait, now you're getting off the track. Now you're talking about serpentine rocks on the top of a mountain. What does that have to do with Obama the communist? Well, I don't know what it has to do with it. I mean, you know, you ask yourself, if you're in this business, try to put some perspective on this. You have one gang of interests versus another gang of interests. They're called Democrat gang, Republican gang. You have two competing philosophies as to how the economy should be run. One gang says, take from everybody who earns and give it to the non-earners. Tax those who work and don't tax those who earn very little. The other people say, wait a minute, that's not fair. But fundamentally, there's no difference in them socially. But the fact of the matter is there really a fundamental difference, I ask myself, between the Republicans and the Democrats? Many people at this point are saying there's no difference. Now, there is, frankly, a very big difference. It is true that there is corruption in both parties, and it's hard to say whether the corruption in the Iraq war profiteering was any greater than the corruption inside the fake solar energy companies and other such deals here in the Obama administration. Very hard to tell. So far as I can tell, Obama pulled us out of Iraq and is soon going to pull us out of Afghanistan in order to make sure that whatever money is spent only on his cronies here in the Democrat Party on fake things such as solar and electric cars that explode. But fundamentally, there's no real difference between one power-mad group and another. That's why today I had to pull myself out of all of this and go up to the serpentine-rich areas of this mountain and look at some of the mountaintop. And as I'm looking at the rocks, I got to tell you, it's related to the economy in a way. I know I'm a little, discursive here, but I look at the big rocks on the top of this mountain, and they're made up of magnesium, nickel, cobalt, chromium, etc. And I think back to the Civil War that almost bankrupted America. And I realized that here in California, in the neighboring state of Nevada, we had, which was once the largest silver stores, I think, discovered at the time, the Comstock Lode. And do you know that the Comstock Lode of silver was used to pay off the Civil War debt? Now, think of what I just said to you. The war cost a great deal of money. The war nearly bankrupted America. But in those days, the politicians couldn't just print money. The money was tied to silver and gold. And so they used the silver, the minerals, in other words, in the earth of Nevada, the natural resources of Nevada, to pay off the war debt. Now, speed the clock forward. We have the Iraq War, which cost this country about $3 trillion, according to some estimates. Those ungrateful SOBs in Iraq have not sent us so much as a barrel of oil because we haven't taken it, nor have we demanded it. You know what I feel about that. We should have taken the oil to pay off the war debt at the very least. But the war debt was never paid off, and that was the beginning of our bankruptcy. Now, you can blame the welfare state all you want, and believe me, there's plenty of blame for the welfare state in terms of our bankrupt state. But the fact of the matter is, it was the war in Iraq that probably began the road that we will never come back from. We have not yet paid off the Iraq war debt. We're not paying off the Afghanistan war debt. Where in the world do you expect this to come from? I ask myself every day, when in fact they're not paying off the debt. We've crossed that magical Rubicon, the tipping point, where the debt equals the GDP, the gross domestic product of the United States of America, putting us in league with the loser nations of the earth. How can this nation survive, I ask myself, when we have two parties that refuse to identify the problem, refuse to address the problem? We have a president who is of the opinion that printing money in order to placate the lower masses by buying their votes, in essence, and in the old days in Chicago, they gave each a little $5 bottle of brandy and brought them to the polling booths drunk. Today, they make sure they get another welfare check or extended unemployment benefits to bring them to the polling booths. So things haven't really changed. It's just the style has changed. That's all. There's no real difference. They're basically buying votes by printing money. What should we talk about? Serpentine rocks? Would you like me to talk about hiking on the mountain today? Serpentine rocks? And the fact that within 110 years, everyone listening to the show will be dead? Do you realize we all share something in common? We're all traversing through the universe at the same time. And that within 110 or so years, everyone listening to this program, in fact, everyone on the planet, whether they were just born or they're 95 years old, will be off this planet. You'll be gone. And you'll just be part of the compost, if at all. And that when you look at a mountain like this and you realize that it was created about 165 million years ago, you know, you realize that life unto itself is a miracle. Our place on this earth is miraculous. It's only for a short dance in the sun that we're here to begin with. How much can I talk about what these empty suits from television have to say about reality? How much can we take of this? What country are we living in that we permit this to go on? How did the system devolve to this point? You know, yesterday I went to a place that has Latin music. Just for an hour, I stopped in, half hour. And there was a group playing from Peru. I happen to love Latin music. I grew up on Puerto Rican music in New York, some Cuban music in New York, and the Palladium and other ballrooms when I was young, and I loved it very much. I came to love all of the greats. I can even name them. As you know, I love their music. So I walk in. The band was great. During the break, the band comes over to me, and the guy says, "This is Michael." He said, "I'm a Latino for Savage." I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "You know, you tell your family stories." He said, "It's just like my family from where I come from." I said, "Where?" He said, "Puerto Rico." He said, "The way you describe your father and his relationship to you when you were young is identical to how my father was to me when I was young." I said, "Well, it's interesting because it's a universal truth." I said, "I have many Palestinians who disagree with me completely on the Israel-Palestine question, but who are avid listeners to the show because in terms of families and family values and the view of the world, they're cousins of mine. We see the world the same way." And he said, "I just want you to know you have a huge audience of Latinos who love you." I said, "I know I do. I know exactly what you're talking about." And I said, "This is the hidden factor of the Savage Nation." And I don't want to now devolve into, you know, how great I am or anything. That's not what I'm trying to say to you here. I'd rather talk about any other topic. It's a talk show. There's no obligation to talk about this, is there? I'd rather do lifestyle questions. If you have a question that's plaguing you, I'll be your lifestyle coach for 5 minutes. Since I have reached a certain age and have a certain degree of knowledge and wisdom that that you could use. I mean, look, when you give money to an expert to advise you on something, you go to the expert because you figure they know more than you do about the subject. That could be a tax accountant. It could be a psychiatrist. It could be a lifestyle coach. It could have been a teacher. Some authority figure who you feel knows something about certain things. And if you're lucky enough to get on the show through my call screen with any lifestyle question, you'll be saving thousands of dollars because you'll get a free answer for whatever it's worth. Truthfully, I mean, that's what I'd rather do. So I'll start with anything but the election right now. I can't take it. I can't take any more of it. I'd rather talk about igneous rocks than Barack Hussein Obama. I would rather talk about the crustacean, the Democrats versus Republicans. I would rather talk about evolution rather than Democrats versus Republicans. Anything, please spare me. Don't do this to me anymore. I can't take another second of it.
I'll be right back.
Play the life coach theme so they know what we're talking about in the Savage Nation. Yeah, oh, that's nice. Desafinado. Desafinado. That's Stan Getz, right? Yes, Stan Getz, Desafinado. 1958 Chrysler was what I had at the time. My father's used car with it. She had a big block Hemi engine in it, I remember. I remember I got T-boned in a crosswalk after an afternoon with a Playboy bunny. No, in those days you could drive after a nice afternoon of pleasure. Today you go away for 7 years. I wasn't speeding. He hit me, and the guy went through a red light. He T-boned the car, and like a Hell's Angel hitter came over. He bought the car for the engine, I remember. I think he paid me $300 just for the engine. They hauled the Hulk away. It was a big car, beautiful engine. Incredible. See, every song has a certain memory attached to it. What are they calling? Okay, Las Vegas, Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead. I'm listening.
All right. Before we talked about doing some tracing with graph paper.
Yeah.
Now you got to keep the picture, the photograph that you took, you got to keep it on.
You know what? No, Mike, truthfully, nobody wants to. That's not art, tracing a picture, is it?
I'll tell you why. You're taking the photograph, and Norman Rockwell, he did the same thing, but he did it with a projection screen.
What do you mean? He projected an image on a screen and painted over it?
No. He just drew the outline. You're not painting it. You're just going to draw the outline. Very thin, light lines. You're not doing the whole picture.
Not painting anymore. I put my paints away since I came back from Florida. It's very interesting. The light here doesn't do the same thing to me that the light in Florida did. The light in Florida was so intense that I started to paint. Now that I've come back to California, although it's beautiful, the intensity is not the same. So my paints are in the top of a closet. I'm not interested in painting again. Isn't that weird how light is so different in different parts of the world? But I like his idea of tracing. That's cheating, as far as I could tell. But, you know, look, John Nagy launched the art careers of many, many people. What is this? Is that a call? No one's calling? Does anyone have a question? Not a question in the whole bunch. No, please, I cannot have any. If I see the word Romney, or whatever else the name is, I'm not taking the call. Blank them out. I'd rather go to a blank screen like an artist and trace on my call board. I can't take it. I swear to you, I'm regurgitating mentally from this. So here we are. I don't know. There's something about me going out on the water. It does something to me that I can't describe. There's no money you can attach to a thing like this. If I go out on my boat for 2 hours or 3 hours, just go around the bay. I like bay boating. I don't like ocean. We went out to the ocean. We got hit with some about 20-foot swells unexpectedly because it's very deceptive. You know, you're inside the bay. There's no wave action at all to speak of. You go out the Golden Gate, and again, until you're going through Point Diablo, and then Point Bonita, and you're out of the open ocean. It's a different world. And the minute you get out past Point Bonita, which is an interesting rock formation, what looked like the bonnet of a missionary. That's where the word Bonita came from, bonnet. Point Bonita, that's the last point outside the bay for those of you who don't boat. It's interesting to look at. you run into the ocean passage that goes up and down the West Coast, and it's pretty awesome, truthfully. And 20 miles offshore are the Farallon Islands, the home of the great whites, the big great whites, some of the largest in the world. They seem to congregate out there and breed out there. Well, we didn't go out to the Farallons, but we went up the coast a little bit, and all of a sudden, I'm drinking a cup of coffee. Why does coffee taste so good on a boat? I said to the young man who works with me, Ryan. I said, Ryan, why does a cup of hot coffee taste better on a boat than anywhere else on Earth? He said, I don't know. I said, possibly because it's cold or something out there, but there's something about coffee on the water. Turn on the coffee machine, make a coffee. We're inside the warm cabin. It's cold out. It's an interesting one. Okay, let's take some callers. Jonathan from Washington State, wherever that may be. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Mr. Savage.
Yes, what's on your mind?
Hey, I had some life advice I was seeking. I'm currently an English major. I'm in my senior year, and I'm really torn between two careers, politics and possibly teaching. I want to get out and teach abroad as well. But I was wondering what your advice would be as far as
If you want a career in the media, you're in the wrong major. You should have had a major in Ebonics rather than English. Mm-hmm. And then you might be hired by MSNBC because the better your English, the command of English, the lower your chances are to work in the American media or in politics. In other words, the lower your vocabulary IQ, the lower your VQ, the higher is your employability by any media outlet in America. If you could say contraception, abortion, then you're hired by ABC. So you don't know which one to follow? Is that it? Are you saying should you teach or should you go into politics? Is that what you're asking?
Right. I want to go into possibly working as a legislative aide, et cetera.
But do you have an opportunity to be employed as a legislative aide?
I'm looking at if I volunteer on.
And then if they like you well enough, they'll offer you a job if you got enough on the ball and they can see you're really motivated, they'll hire you. That's basically how the game works, Jonathan. It's never changed. I mean, everyone's looking for a young person who's a very bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, so to speak, who's willing to work hard, and then they usually hire you. And also, all you are is a vine to someone else's tree the rest of your life. Do you really want to be a vine that wraps yourself around somebody else called the tree? Or don't you want to be a plant of your own? You're asking a very important question, and you have to decide whether you want to be a vine that wraps yourself around someone else's trellis, or whether you want to become something of your own. And that's something you have to decide upon for yourself. I was never the type to want to be anybody's vine, to be frank with you. I mean, I always had to do it on my own, always. And sometimes it was to the detriment of my own success. But that's the way I am, and for me it's worked out to a certain extent. The Loneliness of the Long-Distance Runner was a beautiful title, and it tells a long story. Don't expect to have a lot of friends if you're going to make it on your own and want to work on your own, you know. I'll be right back. Here's a lifestyle question. Mike in New York, go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I wanted to ask, my 19-year-old son is a liberal arts major, and he's a really good kid. He's straight. He's into playing guitar and video games, and other than that, he knows not what he wants to do. And I'd really like to help him refine his search in terms of a career goal.
How old is he?
19, just turned.
No. Most kids at 19 don't know what they want to do, so don't feel alarmed by that. Did you know what you wanted to do at 19? I didn't.
No, I certainly didn't.
No, I didn't. I was always groping and searching. Nobody really knows what they want to do. Very few do, let's put it that way. Those who are driven like that usually want to become some bottom-feeding lawyer who deceives and lies to people. They have an idea from the time they're 9 years old that they're more devious and a better liar than their fellow kids in school, and they become lawyers. But other than that, how many people at 19 know what they really want to become?
Well, liberal arts, I feel like he's wasting his time doing a...
Well, they don't have an alternative called conservative arts yet, do they?
No, that would definitely make
no. Liberal arts consists of how to put a condom on a cucumber, how to roll a doobie, and how to hate America. Those would be the three liberal arts that they learn in college. How to hate your parents, how to hate the church, and how to hate anybody who has anything more than you. That's the liberal arts curriculum today, especially at NYU. But, I mean, your question is a serious one, which is how do you motivate your son to try to, pick his way through this morass called life, right?
Absolutely.
All right, so I'll give you an answer. We'll start with the basics. How does any boy or girl figure out what they want to do to make a living? How do they figure that out? What do they do to figure that out? Well, the first they have to find out. First they have to find out what jobs, if they're just looking for a job, assuming he's not wanting to be a professional, so to speak, of any kind. He doesn't want to go to a law school, medical school, dental school. He doesn't want to be an architect or an engineer. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. So you've eliminated most of the white-collar professions. Therefore, what does he want to do? He has to make a living primarily, correct?
Yes.
All right. So how hard is it for him to go take a job in retail in New York? There are probably thousands of jobs going begging. And you say, well, who wants to work in a lowly paid retail job? The answer is nobody, really. But he gets exposure to humanity that way. And in this exposure, he might get inspired through somebody he meets or something he sees. The trick is to get him out of the house. He's got to work somewhere, Mike.
Yes.
Your name is Mike. Mike, he's got to take a job is what he's got. Is he working now?
He's giving guitar lessons to young kids, and he also is helping my sister in the communications business, but he does a lot of running wires, you know, Category 5 wires and things of that nature.
What do you mean? You mean electronic wires and Cat 5 wiring?
Yes. But, you know,
okay, so he's into electronics?
Yeah, I'm only insofar as my brother-in-law has been training him. My brother-in-law has a business doing that. And I tried.
So he is working. So he is. He's not a total slacker. He's not sitting home like Wayne's World in the basement, is he?
No, but he's part time. He doesn't like it. You know,
he doesn't like it. But that's how life works. Is you take a menial job and you don't like it, and you say I don't want to do this anymore. I can't stand it. You figure out a way that you're going to make more money by doing something else. You train for it, or you get next to somebody who has a better job and you take the job. I mean, there's no magic answer here. How did you get? What do you do for a living?
I'm in financial services, actually, and I did exactly what you said. I hit my head along a few pipes and tried jobs, and I didn't like them, and eventually became into financial services where I helped families.
Well, that's what I'm saying, Sid. There was no magic. Your father didn't come along and give you a silver wand like Mitt Romney's father and give you you didn't have a fortune. You had to fend for yourself.
Yeah, I just feel like I failed him.
But that's the thing is, you feel as a father that he should have been doing better than you already. And you feel that in America, the land of opportunity, the son is supposed to succeed the father financially and socially. That's basically what you feel. And you don't understand why your son has fallen behind you, I think, is another subtext to this conversation.
Yes. Yes.
All right, but Mike, he's young yet. He's not 39, is he?
No.
If he was 39 and still living at home with you and your wife and had a hairnet on and was smoking a joint, I would say you have trouble. But he's a kid. He's only 19 years old. You know, give him time. He'll figure things out. He'll either go with his likes and make a living, or he'll go with his likes and find out that he can't make a dollar doing it. And then he'll say, I can't do this anymore, and he'll become something where there's a job. He'll go back to school for 2 years and become whatever is necessary. He could go. You know, you have no idea what he's liable to do. Just be there for him and love him and tell him he'll work out if he keeps working. That's all you can do for him, Mike. You can't force it, and you can't get angry, and most of all, don't feel badly because he's a young kid yet. He's very young.
His professor, he just signed up for the winter module in his community college, and the professor wanted him. He said, Dad, I don't like this professor. Yeah, I think you'll get a kick out of this. She made it mandatory that they subscribe to the New York Times. When he said he wanted to drop out of our class, I said, any professor, I want you to subscribe to that rag. I want you to drop out of our class. By all means, you want to withdraw, withdraw. And I gave him my full approval on withdrawing out of the class. But I thought it was interesting that a sociologist...
Well, I don't know that you can force him to subscribe to the New York Times, but the fact of the matter is, I was afraid you were going to say that she forced him to subscribe to The Nation or some other overtly communist, rag. All right, stay with your kid. Just remember, Mike, you're feeling bad for yourself that you don't see a more motivated son, but you're not alone in that. How many of your son's, your friend's children are motivated today?
I have a few. I guess that's why I'm a little dejected.
What do you mean? Guys who are like the young guys are already driven into jobs, careers, professions?
Oh, I have one son, one friend's son who's 21 years old, and the kid, he already works for the New York City Comptroller's Office. He's interviewing at some of the biggest firms, and the kid is just, and it's all not because of daddy's affiliation. The kid is just an absolute go-getter, knows that he wants a financial.
All right, so but the, not everyone's the same way. Your son is on the more autistic side, right?
Yes. Indeed.
All right, so he's withdrawn. He's probably, you know, introspective. He doesn't like to run around and compete with people that much. He's a different type of personality.
Absolutely, and that's what worries me.
Well, yes, but Mike, not everybody can be a driven personality who always wants to get ahead and is willing to do anything to get there. It doesn't mean you don't love them, right?
No, of course.
All right, well, Mike, just that, look, we'll probably never talk to each other again. This is actually a very heartwarming and also a hot, it's a troubling conversation in a way, Mike, because you're not the only father in America who is worried about a child. You're one of tens of millions of parents who wonder why their child is not motivated or has fallen behind them in terms of the great American success chase. I don't have a single answer for you other than to say continue to love your child and encourage them to work, 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 because in the midst of even the most menial job, they are likely to meet people who will guide them in ways you could never imagine. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back. I think that you'll find friends in an organization such as a church if you really want friends. Like, I look at the Mormon church sometimes. I think it's an amazingly interesting group of people, and I don't think I'm new to understanding this, because the years I was in the South Pacific collecting plants going back to 1969, long before the word green was popular, I was trying to rescue the botanical knowledge in the South Pacific. But there were many Mormon missionaries that I met. I met Methodists, I met Mormons, I met tremendous Christian men. They were wonderful people. They're amongst the nicest people I've ever met in my life, by the way. How come I don't see any scandals attached to Mormons, incidentally? I was thinking about that this morning. The vermin attack the Mormons because Romney's a Mormon. But they're very upstanding people. I don't know of any scandals attached to Mormons, do you? You name any other religion, you see scandals, right? How come there's no scandals attached to Mormons? Why is that? Could it be they actually practice what they preach? Is that a possibility? They're wonderful people. I had business dealings with Mormons many, many years ago. They wouldn't remember me. Back in the late 70s, I was a consultant in the herbal area, in the world of herbal, you know, herbal products. And I would travel to Salt Lake City. I'd have business meetings. I drank a beer at lunch. They didn't drink, but they didn't look down upon me. See, that was the difference. There was not a judgmentalism about these folks that I met. I said, do you mind if I have a drink? I mean, I traveled a long way. I was having a business meal. I wanted a drink. No, that's fine. We don't. It's perfectly fine. They didn't look at me a strange way. And that's the problem I have with a lot of other religions, which is that, yeah, okay, you're not like us and you're not as good as us. There's a tremendous judgmentalism that I don't like in many of the other formal religions. I don't care which way it is. I think the reason I'm talking about it is because I saw an interesting movie the other day on television that reminded me of my youthful idealism. It was called, I think, The Other Side of Heaven. It was done in 1970, and it was about a Christian missionary, in this case a Mormon, and his years on a Tongan island where he was bringing Christianity to the Tongans. And it reminded me the zeal that he had, reminded me of the zeal I had at that time for rescuing, you know, plant knowledge, and I was going to save the world. I was going to find a new drug in the plant world, and I was just so fanatic in my quest. It was awesome. The passion I had in those days for that kind of work. In that way, I've always been sort of an idealistic social worker in many ways. And if you really want to know the truth, my work on the radio is not much different than that. You go back to 1975, you'll see I wrote a book called Plant the Tree. I put my heart and soul into that. I spent time at the Harvard Botanical Museum, and I researched it, and I wrote that book. I thought it was one of the most important, you know, books I had ever could ever imagine anyone could write. You know, I was going to help organize tree planting in every community in the United States of America to green America. Well, the book didn't become a big hit, nor was it ever talked about. But the fact is that it was all part of this pattern of my life of a desire to make it a better world. And isn't it interesting? Here's the interesting part. While I have spent my entire life trying to make it a better world, the vermin on the left have so distorted my record, just as they try to distort the Republicans. They never, ever attack the vermin on the left, do they? They never tell you about Obama, or they never tell you about any of the others on the Democrat side, do they, and their shady pasts or their strange alliances. They don't ever mention that. And so when you read about me, you're never getting the right. You know who got it closest? Who do you think I feel wrote the best piece about Michael Savage of all time? The one that's closest to who I really am. The New Yorker article. I was thinking about it. He's the only one who ever got it right. And the reason is that although The New Yorker is a liberal magazine and the writer was a man who wrote profiles, he understood where I was coming from the point of view of as an artist rather than as a didactic polemicist. And the left only wants to categorize a few of the words that you say and make that into you. That's how they try to brand you. But the fact of the matter is, there's much more to any man, as you well know, no matter who that man may be, than a few words taken out of context. And this is not in defense of myself. It's just sort of a long discourse on a number of things that I wanted to talk about for no particular reason. So, you know, I actually thought of getting the soundbite from the New Yorker. Remember we had sound of that article? A lot of people listen to the show don't even know that I was profiled in the New Yorker, which to me is a high point in my career, because I think it was amazing. When I was young, look at who was profiled. All of my cultural heroes were profiled in the New Yorker. It's no longer true. I mean, I see such people in the New Yorker I have no respect for whatsoever, but in my day, anyone who was profiled was a respectful individual. Some would say, well, you're not that respectful. Why do they profile you? Well, because you have to judge for yourself. You know, how does a man have so many listeners and have so many best-selling books? He must be doing something that somebody likes. Sam in Columbus, Ohio. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Savage. I'm a university student in Columbus.
Yep.
And I sometimes have a hard time getting things done. And I know you're an accomplished person and you're a successful author. And I was wondering if you had any motivational tips.
Yes, I do. There's only one word that you should have in the middle of your mind at all times. Survival. Survival, survival, survival. Only when you understand that you're really alone in the world and no one's out there to help you and no one will help you and that you have to help yourself and that it's a Darwinian world out there, then you'll find your motivation.
Okay, I understand completely. So
I'm telling Sam, the biggest, the greatest threat to your survival are your friends.
So you're saying I have to just look out and towards my own best interest and just forget about everybody else? And
that is correct. That's 100%. You're right. You're not living in communist China in 1948. You're not marching with Mao over the mountains.
Right.
Then no one cares about Sam. No one's going to help you if really get what you want out of life. They're all out for themselves. We're not living in a communal society. It's not it doesn't take a village. We're not living in it takes a village. You know, Mr. Peepers or whatever. It's not a world of children. Sam has to look out for Sam, and when you get unmotivated and you get complacent is when you're going to get run over, Sam.
Is that what you did, though, to become successful?
Yes, I remember the turning point in my life when I really made great strides in my life is when I got rid of my so-called friends. Every one of them was crippling me. They exploited my weaknesses not because they necessarily wanted to hurt me, but it's because that was the relationship that had been developed at that point. So in other words, if they knew that I liked to drink, they would encourage me to have another drink. You follow what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, they weren't doing it because they said, oh, I want to get Mike. At that time, we were all, you know, friends. We didn't really... They wanted me to be a good time Charlie and have a nice time. But in reality, they really didn't want me to go beyond them either because it would have made them look bad. See, people are afraid when their friends do too well because they feel that they have failed in comparison. So there's almost a desire to keep that friend down. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So you caught this early on, is what you're saying.
Well, I would say, I'll tell you when. I can almost tell you the exact year. I was already quite, you know, motivated at that point. The year was, I'm going to give you the year. I already had my PhD, two master's degrees. I've written a number of books, but I distinctly remember what I had to do to make a jump into a whole new profession. I don't know the year, but I had a book come out called Maximum Immunity that Houghton Mifflin published. And it went into six languages. I was very, very proud of that book. I worked very hard on it. And I remember I had a friend who I'd known for quite a while. We got along very well. And he had the nerve to send me a letter saying that I made a few typographical errors in the book. That was his idea of the book. You hear me? The typos in the book. Well, I said, you know, what kind of friend are you that you would read an entire book and talk about typos? I said, if I were a painter, you'd be talking about the paint that splattered on the easel rather than the painter, rather than the picture I painted. I never talked to him again. Then I had another friend who pretended to be a poet, who thought he was a great poet who one day the world would get to know. He never amounted to anything. I got him published once. I introduced him to a Random House. He wrote a big book. Never talked to him again because he never amounted to anything. Everybody who's ever crossed my path, everybody without exception who I've ever gotten to know well has benefited from the relationship because I've always tried to help my friends. I'm sitting here in one of my home studios doing this show, and on my desk is a copy of the fabulous New Yorker interview from August 3rd, 2009. And I have to read you a piece of this because it's funny, right? Here it is. On a Monday afternoon this past spring, less than an hour after the live portion of his show had ended, Savage welcomed the guest into one of his hideouts, a beautiful, clutter-free little house overlooking San Francisco Bay. He was wearing wide-legged linen trousers, sandals, and a short-sleeve shirt printed with palm trees. As part of his training in herbal medicine, Savage did botanical research in Fiji in the 1970s, and he still looks a bit like the field researcher he used to be. An oil painting in the living room showed the radio host as a young botanist with a full beard holding in his left hand the dark kidney-shaped fruit of the Degeneria vitiensis plant. It was a bright, unseasonably hot day, and he was installed on the back deck with Teddy, who seemed to be enjoying the heat more than Savage was. An assistant brought out a cold bottle of Beck's beer, two glasses, and a bowl of salted peanuts. It's exactly. This writer really got it down right. I really like Party of One, Michael Savage, Unexpurgated by Kalefa Sena. I hope he's still working for the New Yorker. He calls himself a genuine independent conservative, which is a kind of sales pitch, and apparently an effective one. His daily broadcast to Savage Nation is one of the most popular talk shows in the country. And then he goes on. What he gives those listeners is one of the most addictive programs on radio and one of the least predictable. San Francisco is his adopted hometown. He calls it San Francisco, a nickname that may or not be affectionate depending on the context and his mood. It's absolutely true. Sometimes when I say San Francisco, it's actually a compliment. Would you want to live in a perfectly humdrum, normal city? Sometimes a sick city is a good city to live in.